I'm going to get Rico to come back up once he's put that away, because we are going to do a story. I like stories. Do you guys like stories? I love stories. This story includes snacks. So kids, if you are not on the mat, now is your moment, because there are snacks. And only mat people get snacks. Okay. So, first of all, I think you guys have already met David. Here I was thinking he was Rico. He is in fact David. Now, David, while being very good at packing away all of his belongings, was also the youngest son of Jesse. Now, Jesse had how many kids do you reckon Jesse had? More than five. More than three. 21. Whew. Oh, a little bit less than 12. A little bit less than 10. One less than 9. 8. Can you imagine being the youngest of 8 brothers? You'd be pretty good at wrestling, I think. Like, really good at wrestling. Now, we don't know how old David was in this story, but we know that he was young enough to not be called old. So we're just going to call him young David. Now, David looked after sheep. Nice. Nice. Look after your sheep, David. That's very important. So David's older brothers were off fighting wars and doing big grown-up big brother stuff. And David was at home defending his little lambs and his little sheep against lions and tigers and bears. Thank you. Thank you. So he was pretty tough. You wouldn't think it, because he was the scrawny youngest brother. But like, lions came after his sheep. Watch out. Watch out. He's a threat. In fact, he kills them and then he wears them as clothes. Look at him. Terrifying. This is the bear that he got last week. He's pretty proud of it. He's pretty proud of it. In his spare time, he likes to design hats. This is one of his feature pieces. So one day, David's dad goes, You're David. I want you to go see your brothers. Check in on them. See how they're doing. And in fact, I'd like you to bring them some snacks. I've packed some cheese and crackers for you. And he's all like, no worries, Dad. Look after my sheep. Yeah, nice. Nice. Peace out. You're taking your sheep with you to war. It's a brave choice. All right. So David went on a very, very long, long journey to go see his brothers and give them snacks. And so he rocks up and he's like, hey, how you doing? It's so good to see you. And even though he was showing up with snacks, guess what? They were kind of mad. Can you imagine someone gives you free snacks and you're just like, what are you doing here? Aren't you meant to be at home looking after the sheep? What are you doing? I mean, you're handing out crackers like they're going out of fashion. Wow, that's a lot of crackers. And he notices something while he's handing out all of his food. Everyone looks mad, but they also look pretty scared. Kids, can you show me a scared face? Grown-ups, show me a scared face. Oh, there were some pretty good ones in there. I liked that. All right, and he's like, why are they so scared? Why are they so scared? And then he realizes why. And out comes a 9-foot literal giant. Jeez. I'd be scared too. And this giant.
Thank God you were here.
Yeah. Yeah. It's good to see you too. It's actually not. We don't like him. And he is talking smack to the Israelites, all of God's people. He's walking around thinking he's the coolest thing since sliced bread. He is telling them how much he thinks their God sucks. Oh. Oh, mean. Mean is what Goliath is. He's a professional bully. It's all he does. He just walks around. In fact, he was so confident in himself that he's like, you know what? Send me one guy. Just one. Just one. And you know what? He says, if I beat him, we're going to capture all of you.
I get a big stick and I'll poke you in the eye.
And, but, if your guy beats me, highly unlikely, because, you know, he's so confident and stuff, then you can capture us. Yeah. Now, David, out with his brothers, is like, get a load of this guy. Are you kidding? Are you guys just letting him march around like this? How long's he been doing this? How long's he been doing this? And guess how long they said? More than a month. He's been doing this every day for more than a month. 40 days.
It's a long time.
It's a long time. You're getting bored yet?
Yeah, I am. I want
to poke them in the eye. Oh, okay. Okay. Cool. Well, maybe if we move this story along, you'll get to. So, David's like, get a load of this guy. And he just keeps walking around the camp. He's like, yo, Israelites, are you kidding? No one's going to fight him. Eventually, King Saul is like, who is this kid? Bring him to me. Yo, David, what's this I hear about you talking about taking this guy on?
This guy's talking it on the streets about my God, Yahweh, yeah?
Right, right. But you're like just a kid.
Hey?
You're little. He's giant.
What are you talking about?
I got the Lord, my God.
Yeah, but he's 9 foot tall.
Yeah, but I got the Lord, my God, bro.
Do you, though? Are you sure?
Hey?
You reckon that's enough?
Yeah.
All right, game on. This could be interesting. You realize if you lose, we all get captured.
I'm going to keep it 100. I got full confidence.
Full confidence? Jeez. All right, well, you've at least got to go on with some armor. Like, I can't send you on like this. That's dumb. Way too exposed. What do we got? Let's put some armor on you. Excellent. Yep, that'll keep your head safe. Nice. Backwards, because fashion. Oh, jeez. Okay, kids, what do you reckon? Is he looking safe? What do you reckon? Is this going to work? Hang on. Somewhere in here. Oh, no. Oh, yep. I got a sword for you too. All right. How do you feel? How do you feel?
I don't feel good.
Why not?
Too much, man.
It's too much. I reckon it's not enough. Look at all, like, your legs are out.
Bro, it's overboards.
So what's the plan?
I'm going to take it all off.
Please leave your clothes on.
I'm going to take the armor off.
That's a better idea. Yeah, okay, halfway, good. All right, do it your way. All right, mate, what's your weapon of choice then? Oh, a slingshot, you guys. A slingshot. You're a little bit too confident, I think, Goliath. What do you reckon? Is Goliath too confident? Yeah, boo.
Oh, I got cracker. And when I cut your little fella's head off, I'll have all your crackers.
All right. And now it's time for the face-off. Boys and girls, are you ready? Are you ready? Active risk assessment, you're fine. Goliath saunters up to David as if he's going to lose. David saunters all the way up. But he's not just going to let Goliath get away with all that smack talk. He's got to let him know what's what.
Bro, you ain't know what we like at Strong Nation, bro. Honestly, bro, God was with me. You ain't got nothing, bro.
One out.
You coming with the stick and stones, you little tweeny boy?
Mum's bro.
Oh, I think that was a clean hit. Oh, jeez, he makes a lot of fuss, doesn't he? Makes a lot of fuss. Oh, he's down. Hang on. We're not quite done yet. He's got to make sure he finishes the job. Ooh. Ooh. Are you though?
No, all right.
Oh. ladies and gentlemen. Alrighty. Okay, Goliath, you're okay now. You can call it. Yeah, you're good. You guys, give him a big thank you. All right, Jesse, you wanted to let us know what all that was about? Maybe?
All right. Kids, was anyone miss out on cheese and crackers? I think there might have been a few, if we can just toss a couple more in a minute. And we also have some craft for you to do for the next couple of minutes. So we got some colouring in and stuff. And Nicola and Rico are going to bring that out in a moment. But for now, enjoy your cheese and crackers. Well, David and Goliath is a fun story, isn't it? I really enjoy revisiting it. And this morning, I want to share a bit of a take-home for us as a church. Something that God has really spoken to me about in this story, and I've done a real deep dive and found some really interesting things. Like somebody say, scandalous about this story. Like Desperate Housewives type drama. Not even kidding. It's buried in this story, and I want to take you on that journey this morning. Is that cool? Fantastic. Kids, here's the pencils, some David and Goliath colouring in. Knock yourselves out. So I had this question about this story. And my question was, who was David's mum? Who was David's mum? We know his dad is Jesse. I remember that for obvious reasons. But who is his mother? I mean, there's all these really powerful female characters in the Bible, and we hear about them. Naomi, Ruth, Eve, Moses' mother, all of these amazing women we find out about. But for some reason, we don't know David's mother's name. Now, we do know that he had a mother. Maybe you think that's obvious. But some people think, well, maybe she died in childbirth and she's not part of the story. But actually, in 1 Samuel 22, verse 3 and 4, we learn when David is running from Saul, he goes to the king of Moab and asks whether the king of Moab can shelter his father and mother. So we know that when David is progressing along his journey to become king, his mother is still around. Now, I'm going to give you a whole lot of clues, and I'm going to give you some Bible references in case you want to fact check me, okay? We don't have time to read through them all this morning, but I'm going to throw them out there, all right? So if you want to write these down and have a look yourself, you can. We know that David's mother served God. In Psalm 86, verse 16, David talks about how he has a heart to serve the Lord just like his mother did. We also know in 1 Chronicles 2, verse 16, that David had two sisters. Did you know that? David had two sisters. He's one of eight boys, but there were also two sisters. However, in 2 Samuel 17, verse 25, we find out that these two sisters have a different father to David. They're the daughters of Nahash, not the daughters of Jesse, but they are the sisters of David. Are you following me? Yeah, are you interested yet? This is a bit, ooh, what's going on here? So who's Nahash, I wonder? Well, I did a bit of research, and in 1 Samuel chapter 11, we find out about Nahash. Nahash is the king of the Amorites, and King Saul and Israel go up against the Amorites and they defeat the Amorites in 1 Samuel chapter 11. And King Nahash is completely defeated. And so I wonder, could it be that Nahash's wife, or maybe one of his concubines or something, was taken as a spoil of war when the Amorites were defeated? And given as a second wife to Jesse. Could it be? Now, we don't know whether King Nahash was killed or whether he was just captured, but we do know that all of the Amorites were wiped out by the Israelites. And so we've got these two daughters of Nahash who are sisters to David. Now, according to Jewish law, having a wife of somebody who used to be married to somebody else and having children through her as a second wife, and this is her second husband, her children would be considered to be unrighteously conceived. Not the same as your first wife and the first marriage, right? So it's not as righteous as your first children. So children conceived in the second union would be known as unrighteous. And this might explain what David is talking about in Psalm chapter 51, verse 5, when he says, literally, my mother conceived me in sin. David says that, did you know? Psalm 51, you can look it up. So David understood that there was something off about his being brought into the world. In Psalm chapter 69, David kind of tells the story of his struggles with his brothers and with his family and his neighborhood. And he actually talks about how they used to pull pranks on him, put vinegar in his water and things like that. And he says it's the whole community was sort of just teasing and jostling. And he sort of had this reputation in his tribe to be unrighteous or unclean or not worthy. And it spread beyond just his family. And he uses this phrase, he says, I'm a stranger to my brothers. And if you look at the Hebrew of that phrase, sometimes that can literally mean, you know, the B word that means illegitimate child. I think you're following me. That's what that means. I'm a stranger to my brothers. It means the same as what we would say today, right? And that's what David seems to call himself. And there's more evidence that maybe David had a different mother to his brothers, because the Bible is very deliberate about saying that he was ruddy in appearance, which means he had a redness in his skin and his hair. He's a ranger, right? Hey, yes. Yes. Mike is loving it. So now the Bible is very deliberate about that, because most Israelites are very olive in tone, right? Skin tone, like that's what they look like. David looked different, maybe because his mother was a foreigner. She wasn't the same as all the rest of his siblings. Am I convincing you yet? You getting there? Not to mention this. So right before this story that Nicola told, we see that David is anointed as king, right? You familiar? And how that story plays out is that Samuel has to go anoint the new king because God's not pleased with Saul. And he's like, how do I go undercover? And God's like, well, take this cow and sacrifice it. Say you're on your way to sacrifice and invite Jesse's family to come and sacrifice with you. And that's how you can do this anointing undercover without Saul figuring it out. And so Samuel rocks up and Jesse sends some servants and they're afraid. They're like, why is Samuel coming? Like, what's going on here? Because when the prophet of the Lord comes into town, who knows, like we duck for cover because maybe God's unhappy with us. What's going on? And so they say, have you come in peace, Samuel? Have you come in peace? And Samuel says, oh, yeah, I've just come to sacrifice. And so they say, well, what do you want us to do? He said, oh, just bring the whole family. Bring the family of Jesse and tell Jesse to bring his sons. I want his sons to come to the sacrifice. So Jesse's household is in fear of Samuel and of the Lord. And they have asked him to bring his sons to the sacrifice. Now, it doesn't make any sense that Jesse would just forget to bring a son. Right? I used to think, oh, David's the youngest, you know, maybe, oh, he's not of age yet. No, no, no. If you're fearing the prophet of the Lord and the prophet of the Lord asks you to bring all your sons, you bring all your sons. So it's much more plausible to me that maybe for all the reasons that we've just discovered, Jesse considered David not really to be a legitimate son. Technically, yeah, he is, but he's not the same as the first seven, right? And so we can speculate, at the very least, that there are some unusual things going on with David's birth and his childhood. And he certainly felt like he didn't fit in with his family, and he didn't belong with his brothers, and he didn't belong in his community. And he was sent out to the field to look after the sheep. And it's really interesting when David comes down to the battle that we just in the story, and he gets to meet his oldest brother, Eliab. Eliab has a go at him. He's like, what are you doing here, David? And he says the words, why don't you go back and look after that little piece of flock? Like, that's the terminology that he's talking about. So clearly the shepherding that David was doing, it wasn't really seen as valuable for the family. It was sort of like that'll occupy him. Like, he can just go off and do that, right? And so David really had these unideal circumstances in his life. It was hard. And I wonder how many of us have really unideal circumstances in our life as we've grown up, as kids, as teenagers, as young adults. Things haven't been right. Our family's a bit dysfunctional. Our community's not right. We're estranged in our relationships, and we feel abandoned and rejected. I think we can all relate on some level to what David may have felt like through all this. But the second thing that I want to highlight out of this story is what David did in that season. I spoke a few weeks ago about what serving God in the wilderness between Egypt and the promised land. What David did in his wilderness is so interesting. Who thinks, show of hands, that a slinger, actually, I might grab one of those slings. A slinger is more dangerous than an archer. What do you reckon? Hands up if you think archers are more dangerous. Bow and arrow. I mean, like, come on. You can kill a lot of stuff. Hands up if you think slingers are more dangerous. A lot of non-participants, I think. So the truth is this. Let me just put this away for a second. Slinging is, as we just saw, way more difficult to master than archery, which is why archery sort of took prevalence through the medieval period and became much more popular in warfare than slinging. But the facts are, slinging is far more deadly than archery. Slingers counter archers because they can load faster, they can shoot further, and they can kill a lot easier than an archer can if they're fully trained. A fully trained slinger, get this, is accurate enough if a bird flew through this room, I could hit it. Bang. They can hit birds in flight, right? If that wasn't deadly enough, they can launch a projectile, some of them, up to, who reckons they can launch it 50 meters? Who thinks 100? 200? 300? No, they can launch it up to 400 meters. Imagine a big rock fully launched, bang, 400 meters away. That's how far they can launch these things. They've worked out the kinetic energy of a sling projectile has the same energy as a 45 caliber bullet fired out of a pistol. No wonder the Bible says that the rock sunk into Goliath's head. It literally crushed his skull like he got shot with a gun. Literally. And when you understand that and you think about David facing Goliath, no wonder that boy was cocky. No wonder he was confident. He wasn't just walking in blindly saying, well, I hope God does something. No, David was saying, I have trained for this. I had a really unideal situation, but I decided to use my time in the wilderness, rejected and alone, to train in case God needs me. And that's what David did. He was a well-trained, competent slinger. And he could go out there and face Goliath knowing, well, I've done my part and I can trust that God is going to do the rest. Are we making the most of our time in our struggle, in our wilderness, when we're shepherding silly sheep? Are we making the most of that time? Are we being trained for what God might want to use? Our focus this morning is obviously on families, like we do on the first Sunday of every month. And I want you to think about your kids for a second. Or maybe the young people that you're mentoring. Are you training them to be giant slayers? As a parent, I have this decision every day. My goodness. If you know, you know, right? Parents, when your kids are doing things and you're like, what is that about? And you always have this decision. Am I going to just tolerate it? Am I going to just move on? Am I going to just do the quick fix? Or am I going to invest in this child? Because one day they're going to face a giant. Not maybe. No, they're going to face giants. That is life. Am I going to train them for it? Or are they just going to go in and shiver scared on the front lines while the giant taunts them for 40 days? Just this week, poor little Jetty, he got sick and he was throwing up. And we woke up to vomit in our bed at 4:30 a.m. Yeah, parents. And so, he's not doing well. He's thrown up. We kind of deal with it, changed the sheets and went back to sleep. And at 6:30 a.m., I'm getting up, getting ready for work, and he's throwing up on the floor. And I thought, okay, the motherly thing to do is to go, oh, poor honey, just throw up everywhere. Throw up on me, you know, like validate, comfort, nurture. And that's so good. Thank you, mothers, for being that. You need to be that, right? But the father in me went, this could be a teaching moment. Because I thought, well, he's thrown up on the bed and he's thrown up on the floor and he's thrown up four times now. We've had two showers. And I thought, how much better would this situation be if he threw up in a bucket? Yeah, he's 3 years old, but also if he threw up in a bucket, it's a life skill. And I'm like, I can use, and so I said, hey, Jetty, I know you're feeling sick, buddy. The next time that you feel like you're going to throw up, can you grab this bucket and spew in the bucket? He's like, okay, Dad, you know, whatever. So then I go back to continue getting ready for work and 10 minutes go by and sure enough I hear, Dad, and I'm like, oh, here we go for the fifth time already. It's going to be a long day. And I walk out of the bathroom and I see, and he's there with the bucket. He's shivering, throwing up into the bucket. He got it. And I was so proud. I mean, the poor boy, the poor boy. But sure enough, he spewed throughout the rest of the day. I went to work and Geordie looked after him, but he spewed in the bucket for the rest of the day. And he learned this skill. And I thought, it's the trivial things, the things that we think don't matter, we can actually use to train and equip our kids. Like, it's our responsibility to make them likable by people. I know that sounds weird to say, but when I discipline my children and teach them how to behave, I'm doing them a favor because when they grow up, people are going to like them. People are going to want to be with them and smile when they're around and give them opportunities. That's my responsibility as a parent, so that they get the maximal opportunities in life, yeah? So, what if our church decided that we are going to train a generation of giant slayers? What if we got serious about it and encouraged one another? And when we're feeling like we're at our wits' end and I don't know how to parent these kids anymore, I don't know how to disciple these young people anymore, this is difficult, we got around each other and said, yeah, but we're training Davids. We're training future kings of Israel. We're training the giant slayers. How much better would our community be if we had a whole bunch of giant slayers coming up? Amen? Awesome.